You guys, I am so excited. Today I have Amy Swart on with me from Nurture Women's Therapy. I don't know if you followed my Instagram at all, but I have been sharing videos and snippets and photos from our photo session, our branding session that we did a month ago or so, where we curated her outfits and the looks. We rented an Airbnb. We got mamas and their babies in. And honestly, Amy, it was like one of my favorite sessions to date. I don't know if I've told you that,
so
but like, favorite. It was so great. So that is just my quick overview. We're going to dive into it more, but why don't you just give a little background on yourself, go back as far as you want to current day, and then we'll just build off that.
Sure, Missy. I was born on a cool September morning back in the 80s.
I knew it.
When I think about it, I'm from Alexandria, where I currently am. You know, and so it's been this process of me being able to figure out where I want to go, that type of thing. So I grew up in Alec. I knew that I wanted to do something around psychology, mental health, that sort of thing. I had the interest in it, peaked in high school, went to college, was actually pre-med for a while. I have a brother and a father who's a physician. So I was like, I'm going to be a psychiatrist, so I did that for a while, but then I really was able to zero in on, I wanted more of the relational piece of it. Not that there aren't relationships in psychiatry, of course, but modern day psychiatry is more med management, shorter appointments, things like that. And I really wanted to have that time and space to be with the people I was working with, that full hour session, that kind of therapeutic aspect. And so with that, I decided to go all the way through OCHEM before I dropped pre-med. So I do have that. But then I was able to pivot. And so I actually graduated with my degree in psychology. And then I actually went on to get my master's in social work. So I am a licensed independent clinical social worker. Through there, that's a way, one of the routes essentially to be a licensed mental health professional or a therapist in this case. And so it's one of those things when you think about your life and you look back, how things just mold you and bring you the directions that you need to go. And I did that. I was in community mental health then for 10 years. And when you're in community mental health as a therapist, you see a lot of different things, a lot of different populations, lots of different types of needs that your clients have. But through that time, you're also really able to like zone in and figure out like, where am I passionate about? What is it that I feel really called to do? What do I get excited about? Who are the people that I really feel that this is the group that I need to be working with? And so I'm in the process of figuring this out while I'm working in community mental health. And then I went on and I have three kids myself. And then after I had my second, I went through this experience where I was just like trucking along and doing fine. And all of a sudden, bam, postpartum anxiety just hit me like a Mack truck. And I was a therapist at that time, and I didn't know what was happening to me. I didn't. I really did not make any connection about what this was. I knew I didn't feel like myself. I knew that I wasn't feeling good, but I also just shoved it down and muscled my way through it without time on it, without getting a lot of support that I could really benefit from. I had a lot of scary intrusive thoughts, which is a thing I educate moms about all the time, because I thought I was losing it. Like I didn't know what this was. And so through this experience, like through me then coming out of that, really helped light this passion inside me for serving women and moms in particular, like really being out there to advocate and educate, let moms know what's happening, not have people feel the way I felt, honestly. I know, obviously, I can't prevent it, but to be able to be a support in that area. And so that was something. Then when I was still in community mental health, I started zeroing in my trainings with that. I became certified as a perinatal mental health professional through Postpartum Support International, did some extra training, some studying, took the exam, those sort of things. And then in 2021 is when I started my own private practice. So that's when I opened up Nurture Women's Therapy. And that has really allowed me to zero in on like my population. So I serve women in general. So it's not only moms that I see, but that's a huge part of my practice, is being able to be one of those people that can really meet moms where they're at and support them. The other aspect too that I found since I've been in private practice is, so I went in there, so I had my postpartum specialty or perinatal mental health, I should clarify. This is when we talk, when I'm talking about this, I'm talking pregnancy through, by definition, we say pregnancy through a full year postpartum. However, they're looking to try to change that official time frame to 3 or maybe even 5 years, because we just know that it's much longer. It's not just first 6 weeks after you have a baby, like that's it. So it's this really more expansive period of time. So I have that specialty. And then I also have a lot of actually trauma training. I'm trained in something called EMDR. So I do a lot of work with healing from trauma of various types. And then when I went in to private practice, actually, not only am I doing a lot of postpartum, but I actually do a lot of overlap with that. So like birth trauma, infant loss, miscarriage, infertility, things of that nature as well. So yeah. So just, I have really appreciated my journey to get me where I'm at and to be able to like really zero in on this is what I want to do. This is how I'm, I'm feeling fulfilled. I'm excited. And I'm just really happy to be able to support others and do this work.
I think it's so amazing. We're going to touch on everything you said. I think it's so amazing that you just shared that, because that is such a testimony to like where you're at today. Okay, you did the school thing, you changed your major, you knew what you were going for. You're working in community health, you said, or community?
Like community mental health. Yeah, so it's just like an agency in town. Yeah.
Sure. And then from there, getting married, becoming a mother, and then, oh, here we are. Here's my path, because I went through something that was traumatic and I didn't know what was going on. How is anyone else going to know what's going on?
Yeah. I would have considered myself to be one of the more aware people of mental health, because that was my chosen field. And I still was like, I don't know, I guess I just suck at this type of experience.
Well, and I think that wasn't true. I was having symptoms. I think it's so amazing now that, and maybe it's just our age now that people are talking about it, but I really, growing up, like I never heard anything like that. We always brushed everything under the rug. We didn't talk about feelings. If anything bad happened, you're okay. Shh. Yeah. Be quiet. Same deal. And that's not putting any parents or family or anyone down. It's how it was.
That's just culture. That's what it was.
Absolutely. So with that, okay, one of the questions, like I had said, I have questions from moms. So you had said you're trying to expand like what postpartum looks like instead of just 6 weeks. So one thing was, where do I have it here? What, okay. Something changed in my brain, she had said, and she's like, and it happened right after birth and it's still happening today. And it's 5 years later. And she's, what changes in our brain where we can't get it together? And she's like, for instance, I used to love making dinner for the family. And she's, and now my husband makes a dinner and I can barely pull it together. Pull a meal together because I have so many things I need to do and worry about. So when you talk about that, what changes in the brain for mothers after they have their baby and they start feeling symptoms that they maybe don't even know are symptoms?
Exactly. That's a very good point and good question, because I think I really like to think about this from, again, our brain. One, brains experience symptoms, just hearts experience symptoms and kidneys experience symptoms and all those things. So really in general, regardless of what a mom is experiencing, being able to separate symptoms from who you are. Okay. Because it's one of the hard things about postpartum, whether it be depression or anxiety or postpartum PTSD, there's so much more than just postpartum depression, is they don't always feel like symptoms. They feel like who you are. Like, oh, I guess I'm just an angry mom now, or I guess I'm just anxious all the time. When really, like, you're still, you may be experiencing symptoms, but you're still you underneath. Just like when I have the flu, I have fever and chills, but I'm not like the flu now. I know that those symptoms are going to go
away.
Great
way to put it.
Yeah. Right. It's, these are anxious or depressive symptoms that are you, and we're going to go away. But so they're temporary and they're treatable. Now, with your particular question, it also sounds like a vibe of, I think we have to remember too, the idea of our brains only have so much capacity. Okay. Like, we do have a limit. And when you have too much stimuli and all those things, that can feel very overwhelming. So we think about overstimulation, for example. Like, overstimulation is this idea that I only have so much room for sensory input. And if I'm home and I'm like, the TV is on, the radio is on, the dog's barking, I have two different kids asking me two different things at the same time. Plus, I'm trying to figure out if we've made appointments for the doctor and we've got to get everyone in the car to their activities, you know what? I'm at max capacity. And that's where some overstimulation comes in. Like, when sometimes I'll blow up conversations, we're like, no, you're not angry, mom. You're just overstimulated right now. Like, we need to remove some of that. It's a little bit of that question. Yes, maybe there are other symptoms that obviously we didn't get into from that particular thing. But I also think of just knowing, like, that grace and compassion for moms themselves, that there is a limit to how much, like, sensory input your brain can take at one time. And so sometimes when it's maxed out with everything else, you know what? Dinner just is not the thing that we are going to carve out some space for.
I think that is such a great answer. And as you're speaking, I'm thinking of her and this question. And it's, of course, the simple things are going to take the back burner and make you feel lazy. I can't even make dinner. When actuality, everything you just listed off is a day-to-day occurrence, and over just like that mental load you take on. Okay. That's totally, that's awesome.
The mental load of mental load of motherhood is not seen and it's not understood. But when you think about, like, how much energy and capacity your brain has to be firing at all different levels. And I've read this several different variations of this on memes on the internet, but this idea of there are like 12 tabs open and I don't know which one has the music playing type of thing. Like, it's like that type of thing. And it's not that moms can't handle it, or, oh, I guess you can't do the easy stuff anymore. So, you know what? Your brain is being capitalized with all this unseen decision-making, figuring things out, coordinating, getting the backpacks ready and all those stuff. Like, you know what? There's a limit. And yes, moms do a lot. And we also ask a lot of them and we don't always see that. But what we do see are, but I want to do that, or I used to do that, and then I'm not. So ergo, I must be falling short.
Yeah. I see that. And I feel that with even myself, who's not a mother. There's some days I imagine adding kids to the mix with just how overstimulated I get with everything going on.
Yeah.
And then working alongside mothers as well. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's a lot to expect out of moms and dads in, like, the workforce too. Like, we're not the same. We have different obligations outside of work that, like, for me, for the most part, if I get sick, I can work from home or I'm fine. For a mom, like, she has to figure out childcare or stay home, let people down work. And it's just all that, like, the world just really isn't set up for moms sometimes too. And I feel like that part mixed into the load of intrusive thoughts and postpartum is just, man, another layer of.
Totally. And I think there's the weight with that too, because I think there's that weight and that pressure of, okay, I did do this, but now I'm not. And especially I should be doing this. And I talk a lot with moms about eliminating as much as we can should from our vocabulary, because should puts up a pass fail. If I should make dinner, but I don't, I failed. I didn't meet that. Sure. Versus I could make dinner, I want to, and it's not working out. Or in this phase of my life, this is what is working better. Back then, yes, that met my needs, or I had that space for that. Right now, though, this, like, situation where my husband's doing it, but I'm doing the other things, that works for us. You know what? Give it 3 months, 6 months, 6 years, you reevaluate then. Maybe those things shift and now dinner is something that comes back. But it's more so, what is the best I can do or the best decision I can make right now, as opposed to it was, so it should, or, ooh, what if it never changes? And that's also overwhelming. It's just like, you know what? This is what's working for us and that's okay.
That is such a beautiful way to put it and a beautiful way to view it. And it makes so much sense, Amy.
Okay.
Quick PSA, everyone, follow Amy on Instagram, go book a sesh with her, hang out with her. This is going to be hard to stop this podcast because I'm having so much fun. Okay. Yeah. So with that too, I really want to talk about intrusive thought as well. Let's just go there. Let's talk about intrusive thoughts.
Totally.
So
I love talking about intrusive thoughts.
So I get intrusive thoughts all the time too. And yeah, when it comes totally. To children, like I have nieces and nephews that I care for, and they even sneak in when we carry them. And I've listened to things that you say, and it's no, you want to protect them. Your brain is going into, I forget how you put it. You put it so much better.
Yeah, like
it's
hyperdrive. Like,
it's
like,
not you. Those aren't your thoughts.
Yes, totally.
Okay, I'll let you take it because I'm going to fumble over my words with it.
No, I love that. You hit on some good things. And I think, first off, like you said, too, intrusive thoughts are not like, intrusive thoughts in general are universal experience. Like any, if these are these thoughts that pop in and you're like, where do they come from? So if you're driving right. down the road behind a log truck and you watch Final Destination back in the day and you yes. like the log truck go through your windshield
yes.
and you're like, oh, that's an intrusive thought. In that case, though, typically you could just like put on your blinker, go around, and that's that. It doesn't cause anything more. Intrusive thoughts are not like an unknown phenomenon. But what we do know is that in some education I do, during this perinatal period, or even in, like you said too, in your case, caring for young children that you care for deeply, these vulnerable kids, that type of thing, mm-hmm. is that our brain is so wired to make sure our babies stay safe that they are, it's like on the lookout for any possible danger, even if that danger could be accidental or maybe that danger is me. Okay. So if I backtrack, these scary intrusive thoughts I talk a lot about are that 91% of moms are going to have thoughts pop into their head. 91%, by the way. Of harm.
When you said that, I was like, that is huge. Yes.
That's huge. So it's like nearly universal for moms. The difference being is sometimes they can be mild where it's like, ooh, what if they roll off the changing table? And you're like, ooh, yeah, okay. But you just move on and it doesn't cause you much distress. And then there's a whole spectrum of what if they fall down the stairs? What if I push them down the stairs? What if I like hold them over the balcony and drop them down the stairs? Like these harm thoughts pop in your head that freak moms out. They're like, what? Why would I think that's terrifying? I would never do that. And it's scary because you're like tasked with caring for the sweet baby and you have this thought pop in your head. It's terrifying. However, yes, when we look at this from some of the theories behind this evolutionary basis is that our brains are designed to keep our babies safe. Okay. Like we are wired to do that. And your brain is on this high alert experience to find any possible risk. So it's like when you have maybe a toddler and you go into a room that's not baby proofed and you're like, oh my gosh, there's a stairs without a gate. There is an outlet. There's corners everywhere. Like you scan immediately and you start protecting and you move and all those types of things. You're in postpartum and your brain can be doing that like at all times. And it can even go into essentially like hyperdrive and be like, what if I did that? I could do that in theory. Cause yeah, in theory, yes. But here's the thing. When you have a thought that scares you, like that is a sign that it is driven by anxiety, that desire for no harm to come, that your brain's overdoing it basically to make sure that you protect your baby. So if I have a thought of dropping my baby on the stairs and it's freaking me out, what do? I hold my baby extra tight. Okay. If I have to go down the stairs, maybe I scoot down the stairs on my butt. Okay. Maybe I just avoid stairs. Maybe I don't even go there. At these more extreme ways, these thoughts can lead to like different types of behaviors and stuff like that too. But maybe in that case, I'm avoiding stairs. So what is the net goal here? My baby has stayed safe. My baby is safe. My brain just really was a jerk about with how uncomfortable it made me in order to make me do it. But my baby mm-hmm. stayed safe. So if a mom has a thought and it scares you and you're like, oh, why would I think that? That's terrible. That type of thing. Clinically speaking, that's a great sign. That tells us that this is driven by anxiety. This is not a desire. This isn't like something dark mm-hmm. and sinister. This isn't anything that we have to like unpack. Where is this thought coming from? No, it's an intrusive thought. Driven by anxiety, you love your baby so much, you want nothing bad for it to happen. So the what ifs can overtake you at times. And knowing that is huge because so much of what's tough about intrusive thoughts, it's how we interpret them. Okay. So right. if I know that's an intrusive thought, I may not, obviously it's still uncomfortable. Like I don't want it, like not a fan.
Right.
But if I have a thought, I can be like, okay, that's a symptom. That's not me. Which is what I would tell myself when I finally figured out what was going on. I was like, that's a symptom. Mm-hmm. That's not me. that's a symptom. That's not me. And then distract myself. So I wouldn't give it as much power versus initially, if you don't know what it is, it's just like, oh my gosh, am I dangerous? Am I a bad mom?
Right.
I can't tell anybody. Like I have all this shame, all those types of things. But when we know, it's still uncomfortable, but our interpretations cause quite a bit of a difference, huge difference in how distressed we feel about them.
So what would be, okay, so say she's having intrusive thoughts and she recognizes it, but she's still really scared. She kept her baby safe. What would be the next step for her when it comes to seeking help or talking to someone?
Great question. Therapy is very helpful for this, just for the education and the coping with that. So I do a lot of work with moms to be able to, one, educate, which I think really of all the work, of all the different populations I've worked with before I was able to specialize, all those things, when I think about what is the most rewarding moment, honestly, as a therapist, is when I can have a conversation with a mom and say, I know what this is. This is a scary intrusive thought. I'm not worried about it. You're a good mom. This is going to be okay. And to see the relief come over a mom's face is just huge.
Oh, I'm sure.
And it's just something that it's the quickest, like, relief almost. Again, I don't mean relief like all of a sudden you don't have intrusive thoughts anymore. I just mean that when we know and you're not like, oh, there's a name for it. This isn't just me being terrible or scary. Like, it's huge. So I think educating, learning how to cope with these thoughts. Like I tell myself, or no, I did tell myself actually when I figured this out, but the technique I like a lot to use is I tell people it's like ads on social media or Instagram. If I am on Instagram, I'm going to see ads. You just are going to, they're coming. You can't control them. They're there. But I have different things I can do with ads. I can look at an ad and I can say, okay, ooh, I like that. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to click on the link. I'm going to go to the website. I'm going to buy it in every color. I'm going to go quit my job and I'm going to go work there. Like, I can really dive into that ad. Or what I usually do, unless it's a really great swimsuit, is I see the ad and I'm like, eh, ad. And I keep scrolling. Okay. So I noticed it. I labeled it. I didn't try to say, oh, I don't see anything, but I named it and I kept scrolling. And so with our brains, similarly, oh, I tell people we can do that with our thinking. We can have an intrusive thought and we can go down the 15-minute rabbit hole of what that means about me, about my baby, about our safety plan, like all that kind of thing. Or I can have an intrusive thought and I can be like, oh, ooh, yep, that's an intrusive thought. That's a symptom of anxiety. That's not me. Keep scrolling. Okay. And now that doesn't mean they're going to go away, but now we have a tool to tackle that and not give it that weight that causes so much distress. And with time, we find that you may have to do that less and less, which can be really helpful. Now, so therapeutically, learning things like that are really helpful. The other thing, honestly, with intrusive thoughts, medication can be very helpful for intrusive thoughts. Like SSRIs in particular can really help quiet intrusive thoughts and even make them go away. And so again, I know people have different choices that they want to make around that, but we do have that conversation that, like, if we're doing, sometimes these skills are going to be enough to help you, and awesome if it is. And that's not the only thing we have in our arsenal. Like, there are a lot of SSRIs, that type of thing, that can be very helpful in treating these symptoms, because you can't just make your brain stop thinking. That doesn't work. If I tell myself, think about a zebra, I'm imagining herds of zebras, that type of thing. So this is just another tool that we have that can be very helpful, especially if the thoughts are very intense, causing a lot of distress, graphic perhaps. Medication can be super helpful with that too.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there a point in any therapy, like for someone about to become a mom or newly pregnant, where they bring in their partner to the mix so they can be educated as well? So like they can notice changes in what's going on to help them? The reason I ask that is I see a lot of partners who may be a little more hands-off with that. And if one educates themselves and the other partner isn't educated, it seems like that's almost more of a to get through. with postpartum.
Right. You know, and I think that's a very good point, because I agree there is a lot. And I do have plenty of conversations where perhaps mom's partner maybe doesn't understand, maybe hasn't had the opportunity to understand, or maybe hasn't, in some cases, maybe hasn't accepted the information that was provided. Sure. Most of the times is people don't know. Type of thing. But that can be very hard, because if I'm struggling, or whomever it's experiencing is struggling, and you have this person that's one of the most important people in your world, and if you feel like you cannot talk to them, or if the feedback you're going to get from them is going to be not quite as helpful as you're hoping, or that support isn't there, that is really tough. And a lot of that stems from, you said earlier, we're just starting to talk about this more. There's more. I love that there's more education out there. And it's still something that isn't talked about enough. It just isn't. So I just want to keep talking about it. So then if people don't know, it's harder. We're not giving that full run of support, and really this whole team surrounding mom. And so that is something that I have done, where I've had partners come in. I do have some resources that I've been able to provide about, there's a postpartum pact I got from an expert in the field that's, hey, here's some conversations you can have ahead of time of, like, here's what, almost like checklist. Here are these, a bunch of options. These are the things for me I want you to watch out for, so we can know. I've had, then after baby is born, if, when I've started services with mom, that partner has joined, where we've been able to talk together to be able to have just a more educational, let's make a plan together, how we can do that. And I think that can be a very helpful and really important part of this, because again, moms feel so many times that there's this pressure of, hey, isn't this the happiest time of your life? You're so blessed.
Right.
Aren't you glad? Which is, we're not saying that it isn't happy. And we also aren't saying you aren't grateful and that you are blessed. Like, those all can be true. And this can be really hard. And you could be experiencing symptoms of postpartum depression and anxiety. Those are medical complications that happen when you have a baby. Right. It's the most common complication of pregnancy and postpartum. And but moms, when there's that pressure and that leading with, oh, you must be so happy, it doesn't always create a space where a mom feel comfortable saying, actually, I'm struggling in lots of spaces. So there's a big thing of slap a smile on your face, say you're good. Oftentimes, I know this may be going a little tangent off of what you asked, but sometimes
I love a good tangent.
Yeah. So much when things feel so much out of your control, like how you're feeling inside, maybe how things are going inside, trying to navigate things with baby that have been hard. But hey, what's one thing I can control? I can control how I look today, how I present to other people. I can control making it look like I'm fine. So really, like, just that reminder of, even if your friend had a baby, even if they seem fine, still ask them how they're doing. Because maybe they are. They could be. They certainly could be.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And maybe there's something else going on there, but we're not seeing it, or it's not being shown to us. So checking in is so important.
I think that's awesome. And a good reminder for myself too, just to check in on all my friends, all my mama friends too, because when you're not in it, and if you want to present, if you're someone who wants to present that everything's fine,
like,
you just sometimes need that extra love. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Okay. So many more questions. Okay. Yeah. I wanted to ask you too. So, like, I've noticed, and I'm hyper focused on you, obviously, because we've been working together and I just love everything you do. What are you doing different in your industry to shed light, or to, I don't want to say attract more moms, but honestly, a beacon of light and hope to more moms to find you? So what are you doing different to reach your audience?
Good question. So yeah, that is one thing that having your own practice and your own brand in particular has been very helpful, because it allows me to do some of these things differently. I think being able to get really clear about this is what I do is really helpful in that message, which at sometimes people can go into things and be like, oh, but if I get too specific, I'm limiting myself. And in reality, it's quite helpful to be able to be like, hey, this is what I do. Here's what I know. Really speak to your audience, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Really, when we think from like a marketing standpoint, like it's really building relationships in general. Not that's unique to me or the industry, that type of thing, but building those relationships, having those opportunities to get in those spaces and have those conversations. So I love educating. I love talking. Like, I love presenting, honestly. Like, I know that's not something that people always love, like presenting in front of people. I don't actually have much anxiousness about it, and I enjoy it. So I really like to take those opportunities to, whether it's bigger conferences or moms group. I go into a lot of moms groups, like local churches, have conversations with the OB department in Alexandria, those types of things. I have more recently gotten into social media, a new thing for me, but yeah, trying to expand my reach there, because really it's this process of, when you think about typical therapeutic work, you have like one-to-one work with one mom, and that's obviously wonderful and I love that, but also, how can I support more moms? Like, how can I just expand this reach? And also knowing that, this is a side note too, like, you don't have to have a diagnosis to get help either. So I think that is something moms could think of. Like, I'm not bad enough, quote unquote, I haven't been diagnosed with anything. You don't need that to get help. And like, diagnoses help guide treatment direction, but at the end of the day, how you're feeling is still how you're feeling. And that's what's more important. So with that, so I do a mom's support and skills group at the YMCA. So I run a mom's group there. It's a 6-week closed group. I run about 4 times a year, which is another avenue that maybe someone says, hey, maybe I don't want to meet individually, or maybe I don't think I need to meet individually, but hey, I would love to learn some of these skills and things that can be really helpful postpartum. And this group is not just like babies. It's like pregnancy. It's, well, postpartum through, I say right now, it's until you're kids are up to age 3, because this whole period that we're talking about postpartum is so much longer than people maybe initially think. So plus, in a group setting, you're bouncing ideas off of other moms and you're hearing firsthand that you're not alone. Not just me telling you you're not alone, like, you're hearing it from other people. So that's helpful. And then it's just in other ways. I'm looking in ways to, like, how can I do, like, the group programming, a process of figuring this out, as far as creating, I have a, like, an online coaching program that I'm looking into about how can we, like, expand even beyond Minnesota. We're on a virtual basis that moms want support, get some group support plus education from me plus direct support with me to be able to help in that way. So really, like, yeah, what can we do differently to, one, get out there, get the information out there first? Because at the end of the day, I just want moms to know that. And like, the times that I have had perhaps a social media direct message that says something like, I'm so grateful I found your page because I didn't know anything about this. And now I just went and I finally was able to talk to my doctor and I'm on my track to feeling better and get help. Or I thought I was this, and now I know that I'm not alone in this. Those type of things are just so fulfilling, because I just want people to know that you don't always have to feel this way. These are symptoms, they're temporary, they're treatable. Even if it's, again, not clinical diagnostic level, but you're still just not feeling like yourself, like, you're not alone in that. And there's support out there for you, that it does not just have to be you just muscling through on your own.
I think I can just, obviously I have an advantage because I know you, but like, I can feel and see the absolute passion that's pouring from you to help women. And I know that comes from a place where you wanted that and needed that. And I think that's, I feel like crying for some reason, but I feel like that is such a gift of yours that you're sharing that came from something really hard. And I don't know, I think that's really beautiful, Amy.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. And I talk a lot with moms too, this idea of, in our lives, think of it as like this tapestry. Okay. So we're like, we're weaving colors into this tapestry, and like, hey, pretty colors, that type of thing. And all of a sudden you get this space in your life where it's like dark and black. Maybe there's barbed wire in there. And you're like, oh, why would I weave that in there? I don't like this. This is gross. That type of thing. And so in that space, there's healing work that can be done. Maybe we get the barbed wire out. We smooth it out the best we can. We keep going. And eventually the colors come back. We're like, yay. And when you're up close, it might just look like, oh, that's gross, I don't like that part. But then all of a sudden, with time, you're able to step back and look at the whole of the tapestry. And you're like, oh, okay. Yep. I see it now. That's the shadow for this that really makes that part so beautiful, and seeing how these experiences fit into this broader picture of our lives. And so I may think about that with myself, like when I was really struggling and, ooh, I I don't like this part. This is not great. But right. It is how, okay, but I have the benefit of perspective now. So I can see, okay, I see how this, and not just that, but the other things in my life as well too, that have got me where I am today. And even in the, if it's a mom I'm talking to, like even having, or maybe it's someone who's had a traumatic experience. Okay, this is really hard right now. And we're going to do what we can to help support you and work through it, heal from the trauma, healing, that type of thing. And we may not exactly always know how this fits into our story. And we may be surprised down the road how it does. And then you'll right. see that even if we don't see it right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. I love everything that you're sharing, Amy. I just have a couple more questions I want to ask you,
sure.
which I know yeah. are going to be some beautiful conversations we're going to have. What have you learned about yourself recently in these last few months while you've been doing work for others and on yourself? And it doesn't have to be grandiose. It can be something small too.
Yeah. No. Okay. What have I learned about myself? I'm learning how I can break things down and take things one step at a time. I am certainly in a, you look back at me in high school and things I've done, like I'm an achiever by nature. I just want to do it and I want to plan it out and I want to get straight A's. I want to do it, that type of thing. And so being able to like step back and be present of, okay, how can I be, again, present with right now? What do I need right now? Okay. How do I need to let go of like the fears of what's coming next, or it has to be perfect because if this isn't perfect, then this is going to happen and that type of thing, versus, you know what? I can do the best that I can right now. And that's what I can do. I can also work on not overthinking things. Like that can happen quite a bit. I am definitely working on, Amy, make the decision. Press post. It's fine. Like that type of thing. Right. So certainly being present, not getting too far ahead of myself, and being confident without the overthinking.
I love that. That's one thing I've myself lately too, is imperfect action over perfect inaction. Yes, and that has helped me so much with showing up and doing the things.
Yes.
Like this podcast, not perfect. $30 microphone feels great though, because what we're talking about is way more important than my microphone.
Totally. I love it. I love it.
And then, okay, I feel like I know this answer because you love sharing it and it makes me laugh. How do you show up for yourself? How do you take time for yourself during your best mom and moments, darkest days?
Yes. Okay. You maybe, I don't know if you're referencing my love of reading, because that's one thing. I just did a post on it the other day. I do honestly love to read when I think about, man, a great, like just centering myself, come down. Like it started back when I was nursing my third, my daughter, Hannah, and I was just recognizing how much time I was spending on social media and just like, getting worked up about what this random person I haven't seen from high school feels about this. And I'm just like, this isn't helping me. You know, this isn't good. And so I actually started reading when I was nursing and I was spending so much time doing it with my third. And then I was like, this is awesome. And so I got back on the reading train. And then about 2 years ago, I found Sarah J. Maas and her A Court of Thorns and Roses series, which is fantasy romance. And then I hopped on that train and I have never looked back. I'm going. So like,
it is so funny. Love this.
I know.
I think I saw the text. Was it a text that you shared with like on social about, didn't Justin see like a book cover and you're like, oh, it's so good.
Oh yeah. I know. That's funny. It's so funny because he got me Kindle for a gift. And so he set it up under his account. And I didn't realize for like the longest time that when my library, because my library goes through my Kindle, like whenever I would return a book, like he would get an email about what it was. I was like, oh, okay. All right.
Oh, that's so funny.
I'm just going to roll with it. He doesn't get it, but that's okay.
Oh, I love it. On the flip side, I am so into true crime right now. And like,
mysteries.
And Ryan is totally not that way. Like, he wants comedy. He could do a good rom-com. And I'm like, give me some stories here for some reason.
Let me think on this. Totally. When you get to that point in a book where it's, I can't wait to read it again. Oh, I love that. I love that. So that's fine. And that's been fun because like I used to go to bed and scroll social media before I went to sleep. And now I go to bed and I read before I go to sleep. So it's just those things that are of my hobbies that I just am super passionate about. Oh man, my to be read list is so big. And I've always got like something on deck. Like I always know what's coming next.
Oh, so good. You got that anticipation going. Okay. If someone is listening and they're like, cool, Amy, I want to do that. I can't make the time. How would you suggest step one? Do you give yourself 5 minutes? Do you give yourself 5 minutes to do something if you're giving yourself every excuse not to? Or what would you suggest for someone?
I think that's a very good point because I think in general, like when we think about like getting into whether it be reading, whether it be an activity, whether it be therapy, that type of thing. Of sometimes if we wait for motivation to come, it's just not like motivation loves itself. It breathes on itself. Yeah. It just doesn't come.
Right.
And so it's more so breaking it down to what is the smallest amount that feels manageable to me, but I still feel like I've done something. So it's if I can't read for an hour, I might as well not versus then I'm just never going to start. But versus, like, hey, can I get 10 minutes in? And then 10 minutes in, oh, now I'm really into this type of thing. And granted, yes, life might come up and you have appointments to get to, but
absolutely,
I think in general, taking away the pressure of like, the all or nothing, it's like the classic January, like resolutions people are going to get in shape and they're like, I'm going to go to the gym 5 days a week and I'm going to run 3 miles every day. Probably not going to happen or it's going to fall.
Newsflash.
Newsflash. That was too much. Too much to start. It's easier to fall off first. Or maybe you just don't even go because you're like, if I can't go 5 days a week for 3 miles, I might as well not. First, like,
what's the point?
You know, can I go for a walk around my block twice a week? And oh, I'm doing that and that feels good and I'm feeling confident. Now I'm going to add an extra day. And so bringing it to what is the smallest thing that feels doable, but yet you still get a little bit of a boost of, oh, I did something. And just start there. Take off the pressure and then let it unfold after that.
I love that. One thing that really worked for me too, when it came to setting little goals and like just managing like things that I wanted to do for myself was, again, hey, give myself 5 minutes, give myself 10 minutes, but it doesn't have to be the same time every day. Consistency is so drilled into my head where I'm like, what's the point if I can't do it in the morning? It's like, I have time right now at 8:53. I'm going to do a quick mile walk around the neighborhoods. Done.
Totally.
Great.
Exactly.
I have the time today. I might have it tomorrow.
And okay, I like cool. to like this that. Idea of finding like a zone. So this idea of like zones of mastery. There's like things that are so easy that we don't get any like push from. The things in the middle, which are like, I'm doing something I feel good about. And then the things that are like, maybe too much of a reach right away. So if I want to expand my cooking, because it's not my strong suit, but if I wanted to, if I keep making Kraft macaroni and cheese for my kids, that's all I do. Like I'm not gaining anything. Okay. But if I am like, oh, I'm going to do this like French cuisine new thing and like shoot too high and then I do it and it bombs, that's not motivating because now I'm just going to go back to craft. But can I, what's in the middle where it stretches me a little bit, but yet I can do it and I feel good about myself. So can I make a really good meatloaf and feel good about that? And then there I'm going go. To be like motivated to try again or do something different and being able to do that. So finding, what's in that middle that pushes you, it's doable, but isn't going to be discouraging because we set it too high to start with.
Yeah, that is, I resonate with that a lot. I set bars real high because I'm like, oh yeah, I can do that. And then it's like all flat on my face, but we learn from that.
We do. We also learn from that. That's true. You do pick up something from that. That is for sure.
So good. Amy, it has been so amazing asking you all the questions I wanted to ask you. And just honestly, having you share your nuggets of knowledge and your wisdom with whoever is listening today, because like I said, 99.9% are all women. And I would say 98% are mothers, besides my brother listening. Hey, Josh. But he is a husband and his wife has two daughters. And
totally,
I'll give him a little plug. Like he is always willing to help better her and his girls. And I know he's going to take a lot of
that's information awesome.
From this too. And a lot of hindsight from the last few years, I'm sure as well.
Sure.
Okay. With ending, I like to ask this question. What is your spiciest opinion around what you do that some people, I don't know, might disagree with, or maybe have never thought of?
Oh man, spicy.
It can be mild. It doesn't have to be super spicy.
Yes, this might be super spicy, not super spicy, but I just value being authentically genuine. And that's not an unheard of thing in the therapy world, but I think there are some approaches that are just like, oh, tell me more. Blank slate. Do not tell anything about yourself. This is serious. Right. But I'm just like, it's, you can artfully share in a way that is helps the client in like their best interest. So it's not become a session about me. There's this acronym when it comes to therapy that's called WAIT. Why am I talking? Am I talking because it helps them, or I'm talking because I feel like I have to say something about me? And if that's the case, no, don't say it. But if it is like for me, like sharing that, yeah, I had intrusive thoughts, like that oftentimes is very helpful because it helps someone feel
for sure
not alone. That type of thing. So absolutely. I do think being able to like self-disclose in like a mindful and purposeful way can be helpful. And just in general, being like just authentically real. Like I laugh a lot in session. We make jokes about things that maybe are some on color, some off color. I don't know, like those sort of things. But this is a real relationship. And I think that being able to fully show up for who, and just be you. And I think about if you're trying to be someone that you're not or fit this mold, like not only is it not going to feel good for you, but you're also like just not going to make those genuine connections, that which is a big part about a real therapeutic relationship as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So next steps, why don't you just plug yourself a little bit? Where can listeners find you? Where can they learn more about you? Where can they follow you? All the things.
Awesome. Okay. So I have a website, which is nurturewomenstherapy.com. Remember the R. So the biggest thing people forget is like N-U-R-T-U-R-E. So nurture, not
sure.
Nurture.
Yeah. I'll put it so nurture. I'll put it in the show notes too. So people, if you're listening, you can perfect. Click on it in the show notes.
Yes. Yeah. Whenever I get referrals, that's sent to me, like that's a letter that's missing. But anyway, so it's nurturewomenstherapy.com. And then I have Facebook and Instagram, and it's at Nurture Women's Therapy is my handle. And those are the biggest thing. All my contact information, phone calls, emails, stuff like that are on those resources as well. And yeah, I try to be showing up and be active, be accessible in those ways. Again, doing my own thing allows me to budget my time and be able to meet people's needs and get back to them quickly.
That's so awesome that you're in the position to have your own private practice now. And you do see people in person, and you also see people virtually.
I do. Yep. So I have individual work, individual therapy in person and virtual. Like I said, if you're local to the Alexandria area, I have the Nurtured Mama, which is my skills and support group that meets again every 6 weeks at the Y. And then again, like I said, I'm working on creating a group program, like a group coaching program that's even more expansive than that, has some more educational components, more time with me in a group setting, that type of thing. And that's in the works. And that's something I'm hoping to roll out up in the next couple months.
That's so exciting.
It'll be fun. Awesome. It's going to be good.
And so then next steps, if someone really wanted to reach out to you and just seek some support right now, would the easiest way just be going to your website? And then do you have a form, or is it just an email?
Yeah, there is a form on the website. So that's the simplest as far as like not having to look things up. So there's on the contact me, there's a form. And then my number is a business number, and it does accept text messages too. So it's a confidential line for text messages. So as far as like initial reach out, if that's something that helps too, that's also an option.
That's so awesome. I just wanted to lay that out there in case someone listening today really just felt compelled to reach out to you. So that's
perfect.
Awesome.
Perfect.
This is fabulous. I don't want to stop talking, but I know we both have work to do because the work doesn't stop. But any other nuggets of advice or anything you want to leave anyone with?
I would say, so the three things I like people to know a lot. So if you're a mom and you're hearing this, and again, maybe you don't know what you're feeling, it's not yourself. Maybe you do know it's depression or anxiety. This idea of three big things to remember. One, that first, you're not alone. We know that this happens, and we know that it is common. It's the most common, again, a medical complication of having a baby. So you're not alone. And we could go into all kinds of statistics, but just know they're there. Number two, that you're not to blame. This isn't your fault. Like this isn't like you didn't read enough books, or you didn't prepare enough, or that wasn't the right prenatal vitamin for you to take. Like I said, this does not discriminate against race, how much money you make, where you live, those type of things. Again, it just, there's risk factors, yes, that go into this, but as a whole, this isn't something you did or didn't do. Like, you're not to blame. And then with help, you can feel better. Like, it's not a life sentence. This isn't like you changed forever. These are symptoms that are temporary and treatable. And so if you're feeling that way, again, know that you do not have to wait until things are really bad to reach out. There's help out there for you. Sometimes it's quick. Like, I have moms that I meet with, and maybe it's only honestly a handful of times, but we're able to talk things out, make a plan, get some kind of strategies and coping going, and then you spread your wings and you go. Sometimes I meet with people for more longstanding. It just depends on the need, but know that it doesn't, like we talk about that, like that hurdle of making it manageable. Like, you don't have to think, oh, if I make a call, then I'm like locked into therapy for 2 years. No. Nope.
Right.
Don't wait till it's too bad. Like, treatment is really tailored to what a person needs, and just really encourage people to know that, just to reach out.
That's awesome to know. Cause I feel like a lot of people would be like, oh, what am I signing up for? Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing all that, Amy. I don't know. I just love talking to you. I hope to have you on again someday if you enjoyed this, because I love this. This is so good. Any chance to talk?
Yes, exactly.
Awesome. Okay. You have a wonderful rest of your day. Thank you for hanging out with us. I will put all your website, social handles in the show notes. And if anyone listening wants to reach out for support, she's your gal to do. And follow her on Instagram.
Thank you.
Reels. I'm obsessed.
Thank you. Try to be authentically genuine. There we go.
Oh, and I just love you for it. It's so great, Amy.
Thank you.
Perfect. Oh, one thing I wanted to bring up real quick, you guys. Side note, when I first photographed Amy, like, I knew Amy from school, but I don't think our paths ever really crossed growing up, was when you were pregnant with your first daughter and I got to do your maternity pictures. In the back parking lot of like old Broadway. And then we went down to like the trails and stuff.
Yes. Exactly.
Right then and there. I was like, what a beautiful human. That was so fun. Oh, and how old is she?
She's 9. Yeah. So it's 10 years ago. So
9 years ago. Yeah. Oh yeah. 10 years ago. Yeah. So yeah. Awesome. And look where we are today. And it's been so fun just to follow your life's journey. And you too.
Thank you. And I appreciate you, Missy. I love the work you're doing. I love the work you're doing with this, as well as just your skill in like the photos and all the stuff you're doing. But you're just an incredible human yourself.
Thank you, Amy. Awesome. Okay. You have a great rest of your day. We can keep talking. I better shut it off.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Bye, Amy.
All right. Thanks, Missy. Yeah. Bye-bye.
All right, you guys, that is a wrap for today's episode of The Evening Edit. Thank you so much for tuning in and taking time out of your day to just hang out with me. Remember, you can catch a new episode every Monday at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, with the bonus episodes dropping every now and then too. If you would like to share your own story or work with me, email at hello@missyjonesphotography.com, and I would love to hear from you. That is it, you guys. TTYL. Love ya.